Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel Chewable Tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease. Plus, it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's John LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunchventure with Cap'n Crunch.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary. For a limited time only.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network, with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everyone. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 146. Today is July 4th. Happy Independence Day, everyone. What is more American than baseball and talking fantasy baseball, Steve? I'm just picturing the Sandlot and the fireworks in the sky. And a little Ray Charles, America the Beautiful. We got a beautiful episode on deck tonight, talking second half pitching breakout candidates. It's an exercise of trying to catch lightning in a bottle sometimes, and some of these guys are higher rostered, some of these guys are lower rostered, some of them are stashes, but overall, as offense seemingly is warming up and some of the pitchers that we thought were aces are cooling off, everyone is kind of back to that mode of looking for pitching wherever they can find it. And every year it seems like there are some mega breakouts in the second half that end up, swaying our opinions all offseason long. And can't wait to get into it, Steve. I think we've done our best on short notice to pull some good names together, but we can, we can keep it loose. We can explore some stuff. I think we got some good names here and can't wait to get into it, man. How's it going?
It's good. It's good. Glad you brought up Sandlot there. I actually recently, for the first time, not Sandlot, I've seen Sandlot before, but for the first time, I saw Little Big League this week. Shout out to my buddy Luke, who has been ragging on me for being a baseball fan that hasn't seen Little Big League and very much enjoyed it up there with the Sandlots and other amazing baseball, like childhood movies, at least for us. I know we're around the same age, so you grow up with that stuff, so amazing. But yeah, it's going good. I don't know if I mentioned it. I think I may have mentioned it to you off air, but on air we have a groundhog problem in our backyard, and I have a dog that you guys sometimes see in the live streamer, hear him barking in the background sometimes, and he has, he's gotten after them and gotten a few of them the last few weeks. So been dealing with that. it was great having a backyard, moving from Hoboken to the suburbs. But now it's like, all right, I have this backyard, but I have to go out to make sure that he doesn't murder any groundhogs, every time that we let him outside. So, the beauties of being in suburban America rather than the concrete jungle of New York City and Hoboken. But yeah, that's what I'm dealing with on a personal note. I don't know if I mentioned it story on air, but figured it's a little relevant with.
No, that's important, Steve. Hate. I mean, yeah. we every now and then we dip into the wildlife. If you recall,
my pregnant wife
and I got chased by a coyote last mm-hmm. year. While she was pregnant then, now we have the daughter. So yeah, I mean, I hear you, Steve. We got a window broken a couple weeks ago. Earlier tonight, I was talking with my neighbors outside about who's paying for this thing. We're adulting, basically, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's groundhogs or, broken windows. I don't know if you've got a nice segue out of that into talking.
I don't. If anybody has any tips on how to deal with it, I just put mothballs in like the groundhogs like nests or whatever. Supposedly that makes them move, but we'll see. It sounds very pseudoscience and
yeah,
doubt that's actually something that's going to work. But we'll see. The problem is they had a family, so like there's a bunch of little ones running around that. You know, Tate was able to get after.
That groundhog had a family.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, if your staff, for all our listeners, this is going to be a stretch. If your staff feels like Groundhog's Day in terms of mediocrity, we have some names tonight that we're going to be talking about as potential second half breakouts. Again, some of these guys are more rostered, more known. Most of them, really, but there are probably one or two that could be added in shallower leagues. These could be trade targets or stashes again. But Steve, talk to me about this kind of midway point, because I know that the impetus for this episode was last week we did the midway point for hitters, looking at pretty much the halfway mark of the season and what the all-stars were in the rear view. This is more looking out and saying, okay, four pitchers, you know, who based on, you know, a tweak from an arsenal standpoint or possibly a pitch that they've reworked that looks like it's having better results. Sometimes it's playing time opportunity, but every year it does seem like these second half breakouts tend to be game changers. So I think that's the exercise tonight. And yeah, we got a fun list of names here, but want you to weigh in on the topic big picture before we start dialing it in.
I think it's a relevant topic because we're getting to the point where offense is finally starting to heat up. Also to the point where like a lot of these breakout pitchers from the first half are either fading or, you know, the league has caught up a little bit and, you know, fading may be too harsh of a word, but regressing to the mean. Or guys that are still doing well are coming up close to innings limits, right? Or in like a case mm-hmm. of like a Luis Gil, it's coming up to an innings that the pitcher has never reached before, as well as some regression in the league adjusting. And just, you know, there's been some talk over the last few days, especially since he the last start yesterday, about the degradation of his fastball. Like just the IVB has dropped from like an elite number. The induced vertical break, so like the rise on the fastball essentially is dropped from an elite number to below average. So there's a lot going on in the pitching world, and you're going to need to make up for that. Like for the longest time, I complained about it on the show. I complained about it in the Pitcherless Discord. I tried to trade pitching for hitting, and yes, some of those guys have started to regress, and it's like I didn't cash out the absolute peak. But at the same time, I'm also glad that I still have these guys because pitching has gotten a lot worse over the last few weeks as weather has heated up, and some of these guys are seeing teams for the second, third time. It's just a time where I think that, you know, on top in the early season with pitching, it's like all these guys drop with injuries, right? And we all panic. It's like, where are all these pitchers? Then we complain about offense for 2 months in the cold months, and then hitting starts to heat up and we start to complain about pitching again. It's like funny how the narratives change just up and down throughout the season. And I think we're at a time where we're starting to look for pitchers again, but it's also something that happens every year. There's pitchers that break out in the second half every year. I haven't done it the last year or two, but I wrote an article for Pitcher List a few years running about second half pitching breakouts. And, you know, I know that second half splits, anytime you use splits, have their caveats. You don't want to pitching or splits isn't as predictive by halves. But for pitching, you get better data, and we're able to break it down. It's why it's easier to analyze pitchers from an advanced stat perspective, in my mind. So we get large samples. Guys change their pitch mix. Guys increase velocity. And it leads to breakouts, and there's some good names that happen every year, and maybe we could hit on one or two of these names before the breakouts actually happen is the goal.
Yeah. And like you said, I mean, whether it's a Cole Reagans, Blake Snell in the past had some big second halves. Lodolo was a good one. I think was Dylan Cease the one you wrote up, Steve?
Yes. Cease and Alcantara in the second half of 2021. And both those guys went on to have pretty good years following that. I think.
That's right. Yeah.
That was Alcantara's Cy Young year, right?
2022. And that was the year Cease jumped from being a ninth round to a third round where he didn't deliver on that, but who cares if he had him that year. So I love the topic, and I think there's some different tools we can look at, but to go ahead and jump right in, the first one, and like we said, these aren't all rushed to the waiver wire because a lot of these guys are more of the ilk of like a Blake Snell or a Lodolo where they're definitely rostered, but it could create some trade targets as well, or if you got these guys.
I mean, Cease and Alcantara were rostered, you know, all year that year. I mean, Snell the year after, you know, you were all over that, right? There's a lot of names that we hit on here. Yep. Reagans too, last year we were pumping his
someone in this show. Gaps. Yes. It's exactly. a little bit of a roulette thing, but one of these nine names are more likely than not at the end of the season where it'll be like, yep, we hit on it. Mm-hmm. You know, and if you threw out some trades, there could be a lot of profit on the table. And Grayson Rodriguez is the first one that we want to hit on. Rodriguez, of course, big name, high draft capital, and by all accounts, he's putting in a solid, if not great, season so far with the 88 and two-thirds innings, 97 strikeouts, a 3.45 ERA, and a 1.22 WHIP. I think for one, you have to stop and say a 3.45 ERA and a 1.22 WHIP in this environment, this season to date, it's almost like there's a little bit of like inflation, if you will, Steve, that like, I don't think a 3.45 hits this year like it has in past years. Like to me, that's the old 3.9 ERA. So there's that. And also his last handful of starts, it's not so pristine to where there's no shot whatsoever of anyone taking a look at him. I think it was, three starts ago while he had eight strikeouts against the Astros. He did give up a lot of base runners, some runs. With that said, what we've seen lately from a process standpoint has been fantastic, where he's been 10th in K-minus BB percent. And then from kind of the rubric that you've mentioned, Steve, is like what you want to look for here is like a velo jump, pitch mix changes, some of these underlying stats, and did see on Discord some rumblings about how Grayson Rodriguez has introduced kind of a secondary slider, if you will, a tighter slider that he's throwing to lefties. So that to me is interesting that since May 15th, when he did have that 10th overall came on his BB, it's kind of around the time that people have started talking about this. So wanted to hear you talk about Grayson Rodriguez. We can look under the hood and talk about it because at least like, pulling up quick, like in my home league rankings, he's 160th. So it's not like this is a guy who's just like completely off limits, top 30 player overall. So
he's definitely, gettable.
What are you seeing in Grayson?
He's definitely gettable. This is a Nick Pollock special. This is just a guy that, I read every single one of Nick Pollock's roundup like every day, especially for guys that I roster in a good amount of places, and I roster Grayson in a lot of leagues. He was in that range that we liked for like a kind of a risky SP1 with upside, right? Or if you wanted to go a risky SP1 sort of play. And the summary of basically what Nick's been saying is like it's there. The ace breakout is coming. Like it's all the pieces are there, just missing you know, a few tweaks. And the main tweak being like location. Like nothing is questionable with Grayson Rodriguez stuff. He has an amazing fastball, an amazing changeup. It just he wasn't able to spot changeups low in the zone and fastballs high consistently, and also throw his slider for strikes. And he is starting to do that. I'll bring up a graphic here for those on the live stream. And this is what made Nick super, super excited about Grayson's most recent start on Tuesday, July 2nd, so this past Tuesday, where he had a great game. I think it was 6 1/3 innings pitched, 8 Ks, no runs, 4 walks, but it was more of the location of the changeup just spotted down in the zone that got Nick super excited. Like, he was having this good year basically throwing, like, middle changeups. Like, if you look at this the Savant game feed pitch location pitch chart from his last game before he was hurt, he missed, I think it was the minimum stint, but you see those green dots that are just center and up. Those are changeups that are just up in the zone.
Right.
And there's also, you know, several below the zone that are just absolute waste pitches. So, like, it just goes to show you that he was still doing pretty good just without this amazing, pristine command that he needed, or not even amazing or, you know, command, just good enough command to throw changeup low, not just in the zone. And then you see the start on the right, this most recent start versus Seattle, like even though it was 4 walks, like I could see why Nick is excited. There was just a cluster of green changeup dots at the bottom of the zone. And then those fastballs up, and he didn't even have the best command of his fastball. Like, you know, there's 4 or 5 fastballs in the right-handed batter's like face, right? A few of them above his head. So that's not even there. You know, there's some hung sliders and some sliders at the feet, those yellow dots there. But if he can consistently locate that changeup low in the zone, like Nick's been asking for all year, like this could be the second half pitcher and the second half performance that propels him to, like, you know, what sort of Cease was, like a back end top 20, top 15 drafted starter for next year. He definitely has the stuff to do it, and I'm excited for it. Like, he has 5 pitches with a swing strike rate greater than like 27%. It's absolutely insane. Like, I've never seen that with a pitcher. Like, you know, there's usually one or two, like a pitcher that doesn't throw that much, that doesn't have a whiff percentage that's high, but all of his pitches that he throw, hitters, when they swing, miss a quarter of a time. That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is. And he goes to 4 of them very often.
Yeah.
Overall, like, looking last year to this year, which, by the way, since last year's All-Star break, I mean, just searching Twitter, here's a tweet from @BaltimoreLuke. Since being recalled right after last year's All-Star break, Grayson Rodriguez has gone 15-5 with a 3.05 ERA in 28 starts, 9.25 strikeouts per 9. So, like, even as is, you're getting, like, ace-adjacent production, right? But, like... Yeah. Just looking at year over year from last year to this year, it's interesting. Like, the four seamers dropped a tick in velo. I'm trying to see, but he's also added like some extension there. But
wonder if that's like a sacrifice for a bit more of command, you know?
Exactly. That's what I'm wondering too. So, like, looking at, it looks like the walks are coming down a little bit. The xERA has come down from 4.21 last year to 3.84. So, yeah, definitely seems like a good target for, you know, a guy that basically, I mean, I know Paul Skenes, everyone is saying, like, generational, like, the best pitching prospect since Strasburg. But, like, Grayson had that kind of juice as well. Like, I don't know if he'd be top 3 or top 5 since Strasburg, but definitely
up there. And there were some lumps, like, throughout his prospect path, right, that kind of took away a bit of that.
You're right.
That the sheen, that steam. Like, yeah. he was demoted last year. Like, there was a point in the minors where he wasn't striking out that many guys. So it's been a bit more of a bumpy path, whereas, like, Skeens has sort of taken the Strasburg route, just gone basically essentially straight from college to best pitcher in the league. So mm-hmm. maybe it's a tier below that as a pitching prospect, but I still think that Grayson has, like, you know, Cy Young finalist upside, at least, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That, the most recent start, he did have four walks, which was not ideal, but I think, mm-hmm. again, that's where, like you said, he's gettable, and I think that's what makes him intriguing with everything. So, yeah.
And the walks, I think, you know, it's always going to be, I think it's going to be more than you hope. Mm-hmm. He's right at, like, a league average walk rate, and I don't know if that's going to get much, much better. But mm-hmm. I don't think it has to. And it it's kind of could be a bit of the Blake Snell, okay, I don't care if I walk this guy because I'm going to strike out the next two guys. Mm-hmm. Sort of approach. So I think it's more look at, like, the locations of his pitch, and when he has a start of spotting changeups down like he did finally, like Nick's been calling for all year, and if he does it again, then you can become even more interested, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So that's Grayson. To keep moving along, it's quite a shift here, Steve, where looking at the Chicago Cubs and their pitching staff, which has been okay. I mean, the bullpen has been the real travesty, but there's room when your SP4 is Hendricks, Hayden Wesneski kind of getting a shot, to look at Ben Brown. And Brown is one that, when you look at the numbers, he's got good strikeout rate. He himself has good whiff percentage, has real good fastball velocity with sitting at 96 miles per hour. And with a bullpen session this week, it kind of calls into question, is there room for a Ben Brown to come in and basically ease himself into what's otherwise, you know, a pretty struggling Cubs team? Just 15% rostered for the Cubbies. Talk to me about what you're thinking with Ben Brown here.
This is the kind of pitcher that I easily fall in love with. And mm-hmm. I'm despite him not being healthy right now.
Yeah. Slightly high walk rate.
The just stuff off the charts. Like the Fangraph grades on his fastball and curveball were 60 for the fastball, 70 for the curveball. Don't mind the 40 grade on the command, but that's the kind of stuff that gets me super excited. And also, you know, a start like he had at Milwaukee, 7 innings, 10 strikeouts, 2 walks, no hits at the end of May. He has started the last 5 games that he pitched in, 4 games that he pitched in. Yeah, it did lead to an injury, so maybe he wasn't quite ready for that just as far as being stretched out. But I still think that it's exciting. And yeah, one of those starts wasn't even good. He gave up 5 runs in 5 innings, but he did still have 6 strikeouts and 1 walk. So this is just like a pure stuff play, like hope they keep him in the rotation. I wanted to balance it out as far as like guys that, like, you should be able to add Ben Brown. It would take a lot to get Grayson Rodriguez, but, he's 80th percentile in whiff percentage. He does give up a lot of hard contact. Maybe it's only 3 pitches in the fastball, curveball, and changeup. And he doesn't even throw the changeup that much, so it's really just 2 pitches. He only throwed 14 changeups, so it's essentially 2 pitches. The changeup is good by, like, stuff metrics, so maybe he just needs to get a little bit more comfortable throwing it. And it does have a 25% whiff percentage. He's only thrown 14 to lefties, though, so super small sample.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's like a closer. Like, Ben Brown should be the closer if he's not a starter, if they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
But it's still good enough stuff for me to be really intrigued. And I, at least I hope at first they give him a shot,
dude,
to start.
I think they have to. 70 grade curveball, 60 grade fastball. Dude's 6'6" and just pulling up his AAA last year. Yeah, 100 strikeouts in 72 and two-thirds innings. I think run prevention, like you're saying, Steve, is that's a question, and I think part of that is the control. But I think that's what makes him, you know, have that breakout ability. Like you talked about a Dylan Cease, that was his issue, right? And kind of is. And it's always a concerning thing. Like in that AAA sample, Ben Brown had a 15.8% walk rate. So that's over 72 innings. So that's high. I mean, I think you got to expect he's going to have a little
ABS
bit of
ABS too is a factor there too, automated balls and strikes. So, something to consider. He's only 15% rostered in Yahoo leagues. I would add him before we get news of like a rehab assignment.
I think that's fair. What do you think about Ben Brown in terms of a stash? Asking for a friend here, Ben Brown or David Festa, who tonight was on the mound against the Tigers, 5 innings, 6 Ks, but a 12.6 ERA, gave up a grand slam. But people, I mean, Festa's an interesting case because I know he's gotten like BABIPed and he's had some kind of rough luck, but the strikeouts are salivating.
Yeah.
But between those two, which one in a vacuum would you rather like
stash like both.
At prospect
I like slot? Both, and like it depends on sort of your need. Like if you need a pitcher that's pitching, like I'm sure Festa, if he stays in the rotation, will have better like – yes, he obviously will have a better start than like he had tonight, where he just gave up a massive home run to Riley Green too. A lot of hard contact despite those 6 strikeouts. But if you could survive with someone on your IL that may not be back for another 2 weeks, maybe at least till past the All-Star break, I could see leaning towards Ben Brown because he did have a game where he did have 7 innings and 10 strikeouts, right? Festa has not done that just yet. And who knows how long Festa's going to be in a rotation spot. I know Paddock, I think maybe throwing already. He hasn't been great. He's been up and down this year. The Twins are also in more – I know the Cubs are still in it, but the Twins are actively in a playoff spot. Cubs are sort of in that mushy middle wild card. Mm-hmm. Everyone's a playoff contender, NL, wild card spot. So they may have more leeway with Brown and see what he has, whereas the Twins can't actively afford blow up
to be patient
versus the Tigers. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that makes total sense. Well, there you go. Ben Brown, 15% rostered and bullpen session this week. So go out and at the minimum put him on the watch list. But otherwise could be a nice stash, like you're saying, Steve. We have a 3-pack of Rays. But first, we got to take our first ad break, and we'll be right back after this.
Dogs are an important part of our lives. That means protecting them from parasites. Ask your vet about NexGard Plus, afoxolaner, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection against fleas, ticks, heartworm disease, roundworms, and hookworms. Plus, they're delicious and easy to give. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive. Ask about NexGard Plus Chews.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunchberries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on.
Crunch Island. It's John LaFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunchberry.
No!
No one steals my Crunchberries.
I think you mean my Crunchberries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
With the $5 meal deal at McDonald's, you pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a 4-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Price and participation may vary for a limited time only.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
All right, so Steve, it seemed like, the first half of the season, we found ourselves not really talking about a lot of Rays. And, here we are talking about, at least starting with a couple. And Jeffrey Springs is the one I wanted to hit in the spirit of talking about stashes. Jeffrey Springs had a rehab outing tonight, folks, and this is the first time he's been on the mound since Tommy John, I believe, and threw 4 innings, 6 strikeouts, 0 runs. And as a reminder, we saw Springs for 2 glorious starts at the start of 2023, where he looked like an SP1 and had like a 43% strikeout rate, one of the better changeups in all of baseball, and looked like he was turning a corner into full-on acedom last year. Jeffrey Springs only 19% rostered in Yahoo. So this to me seems like if you have the slot, it's a sprint to go grab him because
stash I think him he over be. Ben Brown, not to interrupt you, but yeah
I think yeah. so. And just yeah. 19%, yeah. he should be back in the rotation by the end of the month. So I think Springs, it's kind of a no-brainer, but if you want to add anything here before we get to another couple of Rays here.
I'm actively stashing him in my home league. So I think it's a great call. We'll get to him a little bit later when we talk about another Ray. It was just funny looking at this rundown. It was like 4 Rays or 5 actually, right?
Oh my gosh.
Crazy. Four.
Four. I was going to say.
But still, so 4/5 of their rotation we like. That was a funny thing looking through this rundown as regards to the names. But yeah.
It's a good sign for – it's a good bet for breakouts,
right? It is maybe
right?
a bit, you know, it's the command that sort of comes second coming back from Tommy John. I don't know if Springs had the internal brace or the full Tommy John procedure because, right, it was just last –
He was a quick – actually right? was a
it's
quick
relatively
recovery.
Quick.
But
yeah.
I remember the report said that it was TJ.
Okay. And I think he is maybe a bit more of a command guy. I could be a little bit wrong on that. His stuff was really good for that brief stint that we saw that got us super excited about him last year, right?
Mm-hmm. And it was like – it was like that in spring. It felt like he was going from the – because he had the 5.6% walk rate, 26% K rate. So you're right. He was kind of,
and this was another second half, right? This was a second half thing with Springs, where at least he came on the scenes like May, June, around this time last year, or in 2022. So
second half in 2022, he had a 2.40 ERA and a 1.09 WHIP in that time. Definitely lights out.
I would absolutely run to stash him if you have the IL spot because at 4 innings, this could be 2, maybe 3 starts away. I know they sort of slow played it with a guy that we'll talk about coming up soon in Shane Baz, but that maybe has more of the prospect and there was an additional injury on his recovery there too. So could be back sooner than later, and also another team that's like hovering around 500 and needs to start to win some games here. So and who knows, maybe the Rays could also flip assets like this relatively quickly considering how they operate too.
But that's Jeffrey Springs. I think to me I just highly or extremely under rostered looking at like this whole list. I think it's one of the ones where you need to be quickest to move on it because with the All-Star break, you're really only missing like a couple weeks before.
That's
you get
also
a guy
true.
Who could
yeah.
be
yeah. There's a built-in break there for guys to sort of recover where there aren't games being played. That's a good point too.
Well, moving on to Ray number 2, which is Taj Bradley. And this is one that is quite a climber on the Nick Pollock pitcher list, and for good reason. Basically, the splitter and the four-seamer have just been pounding the zone for strikes, and he's also getting chase rate, more and more chase rates on that from May to June. It's just a straight ramp up. But yeah, the splitter, it really looks like he's finding a feel for it in terms of like swing and miss stuff. And yeah, his last five starts, Taj Bradley, 29 innings, 40 strikeouts, a 124 ERA. This is a guy that, again, I think, like, when you look at the entire body of work, it still looks like, you know, a 342 ERA, a 112 whip. Of course, you're probably getting him as pricey as he'll get with his most recent outing, a shutout and 11 strikeouts against the Nats. And he had an 11 strikeout outing a few turns ago. But yeah, as Nick put in the write up, I believe it was a Matrix shout out, but he's beginning to believe. And it's like, we've seen this from Taj Bradley. When he came up, he looked great, and then he wobbled and everything. But it looks like he is starting to dominate with the splitter and the four seamer. So I don't know how you play this one strategically, Steve. It's like, maybe if you see another bump or two in the road, you try to approach it then. But obviously, this isn't one that, I mean, I guess 63% rostered is still so under rostered. Mm-hmm. So if you're in 10 teamers,
yeah.
I just can't believe that. Maybe some 12 teamers, he's still out on the wire, which is nuts. But yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing Bradley emerge into what will probably be like an SP2-3 range for next year. But your thoughts on Taj Bradley?
I am pretty upset at myself for not being more in and having more shares of Taj Bradley. I know there's been some up and downs and there's been injury and he only has at 55 innings, but hey, that means that a bulk of his innings are saved for the second half, right?
You're right.
It's not like a Garrett Crochet situation where like they're going to start slowly ramping him down. He had 145 innings last year. There could be another 110 the rest of the way, which basically should carry you to close to the end of the season, considering he only has 55 major league innings this year. I don't know how I wasn't all over a guy that had close to a 30% K rate. Sure, the walk rate's a little high, but like there was a low left on base, a high home run to fly ball, amazing stuff, good fastball velocity. Really good swing and miss. The swing and miss is even better this year at a 13.6 swing strike rate.
Steve,
I'm upset at myself.
A small victory lap, because I can't take many, if any at all, in our listener league. But $43 fab bid for Taj Bradley. So you know, as the boys are trying to gang up on me for Ben Rice. Just find the median between the two, and yeah, 43 is not too bad for what we've gotten from Taj Bradley.
So
that's Bradley. I think that's a great one. And then Steve rounded out with talking about Shane Boz, who also will be kind of returning, probably similar, him and Springs both by the end of the month. Man, it's going to be a fun time to tune in and watch some Rays baseball, regardless of who is on the bump. But what do you think with Boz here? Do you think, like, I know we've joked before about, like, is he even real? like, I can't wait to watch him just to, like, actually witness. But what can we expect after what seems like 2 or 3 years of waiting?
Boz is actually going to start on Friday.
Ooh.
He is taking Aaron Civale, recently traded to the Brewers, spot in the rotation. It's been a bumpy ride. I drafted Boz in a lot of leagues. I've stashed him in my IL spot all year and won. I watched several Durham Bull games, like just seeing how it was. And when he first started pitching again, we came back from that ladder injury in May. He did not look good. However, over the last month, it has looked like he has returned to form. In June, He has a 1.57 ERA with a 35-10 strikeout to walk ratio and 23 innings pitched. So yeah, 35 Ks and 23 innings sounds about right for Shane Boz. And shout out guest of the show, friend of the program at TJ Stats, Thomas Nesco. This is the graphic I have up on the live stream, and he basically had a summary about how this stuff has just steadily been improving throughout the minor league rehab stint, and essentially, you know, extended rehab stint. They optioned him to the minors once the rehab period was over. Sure, the 4.12 ERA and 1.58 WHIP does not jump off the page, but you know, that's been a lot better in recent starts throughout June specifically, where he only has 10 walks. I think it's kind of going to be, at least what I hope it's going to be, is similar to Taj Bradley. Maybe a little bit too much walks, maybe a little bit too much home runs, some hard contact that may not be great. But, you know, it was just 2 years ago that we were all over Shane Boz. We were talking to Alex Chamberlain about Shane Boz no matter what and how excited we are. And, you know, he was the Paul Skeens, Jared Jones stuffest prospect that you had to have, right? Like, I think he was going in like the 10th to 12th round without even having like a pitch before he got hurt that one season, or minimal time in the majors before. Well, he was drafted like essentially like an SP2 or 3. That's how good his stuff is. So I really, really hope, just for like the sake of like watching an awesome pitcher, that Shane Boz finally stays healthy and puts it all together, because his stuff is absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it was 2021 where he had looks like about 80 innings across Double A and Triple A, and at Double A he had a 40.8% K rate and a 36% K rate at Triple A. So that's what you're dreaming on, and the walk rate then was basically like 4-5% averaged out.
So he had better walk rates pre-injury.
But you're right. Now it's looked a little bit elevated.
And who knows? Maybe that's a factor of when he was first coming back and
trying.
The Rays are a good organization with pitchers, right? There's a reason why he had that extended rehab, and then was optioned to the minors to sort of figure it out. And now he figured it out. And maybe that's why they traded Savale too, just a sign that they believe that he's ready. So I'm excited for it. Shout out again, TJ Stats, for these amazing cards. You can see the really, really good stuff on the slider and the curveball. The four seam too. I know Eno Saris of the Athletic was talking about it a lot. Like, there was fluctuations in starts where, like, in the rehab process, that his four seam looked really good, then it kind of dipped down the next start. Like, whenever your pitcher's working through that sort of stuff, it's like, all right, like, I know my fastball was there last time, I'm going to work on this. Like, you don't know what their actual intention is. Whereas in the majors, it's obviously, you know, every single pitch is thrown with the utmost intention to get the most out of it. Whereas in the minor league rehab, they may be working on one thing, one way or the other. So you never know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only cold water, obviously it's going to be awesome to see him go on Friday, but the cold waters, I would imagine he will probably get the quick hook around four innings, almost, you know, for at least a month and a half. Like, I think from now to the end of the season.
Unless he's super efficient, I don't see him going into the sixth often.
Like, ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's already at 40 innings, and the most he has ever pitched in a season was in 2021, where it was like 89 innings. So, you know, do the math there. It's like he's 50
innings
away.
Yeah, I can't imagine they have him, you know, penciled in for much more than like 150 innings total.
That seems like, even that seems high. Like, yeah, that would Steamer seem high. Steamer has him at 7 starts, 44 innings. So what's that comes out to, like, so they do have him going like 5 and change there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think 5 innings is the expectation. So
for sure.
That is Shane Boz. Man, fun question, Steve. No wrong answer, but how would you kind of rank between Boz, Bradley, and Springs the second half breakoutness of these three?
I would go Bradley, Springs, and Boz.
Yeah, that's tough.
It's tough. I
mean, Bradley, and Bradley's already, yeah, he's showing it. So it's like, it feels like that's it. But honestly, I mean, I think I'm biased because I had Springs and I was so pumped watching all those. Like, I watched both of his starts and then was just like devastated. And remember, he was like, you know, everybody's lip reading where he's like, it's my elbow and everything. I think I'm, until I see that he's like, different, because this, especially with the shutout 6Ks thing, I think I'm Springs, Bradley, Boz, and Boz only because of the volume.
So but I'm excited Springs about Springs over Bradley.
I think in terms of the
like
breakout
ceiling potential, like ceiling potential, yeah.
Well, I mean, I think I'm discounting
how good Springs was in 2022 and how excited we were for him last year.
Yeah, he just looked like he turned a corner. It was like Glasnow-esque with the K's, which I know only two starts, but I think the like the run prevention, because Taj, like, let me look at he is prone to a blow up every now and then, although it's been a good while. But yeah, like he had that 9 run. He got pummeled by the Orioles this season. He gave up 9 runs in one start. Like, that's the type of blow up that I just don't. I think Springs has avoids a little bit more of that, like, finesse. Yeah. He's 31. Taj Bradley's 23. But I do think.
I don't know if Springs has like the, you know, 6 innings, 12K game in him, though.
Agree.
That Bradley does, right?
Yeah. I mean, so, and just to let me just look at it because I forget what the. So in 2023. His first start, he went 6 innings, 12 strikeouts against the Tigers, one walk, no hits. His second start was against the A's, 7 innings, 3 hits, 7 strikeouts. And then the third one is where he went down,
and got hurt,
but that was 3 innings, 5 Ks. So, yeah. Like, it definitely looked like he was turning a corner in
terms
of
swinging.
It looked
like it, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, those three... awesome to target, go after.
We got a comment here though from Jack Kramer about Pivetta. Do we like Pivetta? He was actually on my
original rundown.
And I eliminated him for the sole reason that, you know, we were talking about Grayson and we were talking about Taj Bradley, like guys that are basically universally rostered. But I had Pivetta on a short list for a second half breakout. So I think, yes, it's safe to say that we do like him. I do like him, sure, but I think maybe we could talk about him, because despite, you know, some really good starts, it's still just a 4.52 ERA, and is definitely gettable. Like, there was some leagues where, I forget if it was you, Van, who we were talking, like, Pivetta was dropped in a league, in your home league or something like that. I know you're big on Pivetta, so I'll give you the floor here.
I mean, I think there's a couple issues. Like, I know Nick is slowly scooting him down and basically saying, like, if he's wobbly, it's like the Whirly Bird last year is what was so good with, like, the swing and miss stuff. And this year, the swing and miss stuff is down a little bit on, like, so let's
it was a 13% swing strike rate last year. It's back down to 10.5%, which is basically where he was in 21 and 22 at 10.6% and 10% swing strike rate, which, you know, it was good, but that was like a 4.50 ERA pitcher, because, you know, there was a homer and a third per nine. And the homers are back again this year at 1.9 homers per nine, a high BABIP. So there is definitely some luck factor, but I don't know if we're going to get like a low threes Nick Pivetta sort of ever, maybe, despite him being a really good pitcher. It's kind of a strange thing to say, but he's walking less guys. He's still striking out 27% of the guys. Yeah, it's not the 31% last year, but I still think that there's a really good pitcher in here.
No, you're right. You're right. The K minus BB is encouraging. The high BABIP is encouraging. But yeah, you're just looking for basically him to find the touch on that pitch again. If he doesn't, he's just prone to being, you know, a little bit more of like that Lodolo type where it's like, yeah, you might get your K's, but you're also going to get runs with that. I know I'm a little upset because I hitched my wagon to him as like an SP1-2, and it has not been the case. I think he's had about three starts this season where he has looked like an ace, so I think that's what you're wish casting is like, you know, he's had the 10 strikeouts early on, and then he got the injury, and even since the injury, he fanned nine Tigers and then nine, oh yeah, the Braves one, which was, that one killed me because that was a start a lot of people like benched him.
We're kind
of
out, yeah.
Right.
He was dropped like
seven,
right before
seven
that.
Seven innings,
yeah.
Nine strikeouts. So yeah, we'll see on Pivetta. I know I said Nick's cooling off on him, but he's still up there on the list. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think he's right now maybe I want to say like 45 or something like that. So, okay, 56. So he's moving down a little bit.
I would take the under on like, it's not that bold, but I would take the under on him finishing in the top 40. We saw it last year, right? Like he had that amazing run the second half last year. Like he has it in him. Yeah, it's not the amazing whiff percent on, what is it, the sweeper that it's considered on Savant. It was 44% whiff percentage last year. It's down to, with a 36% put away. So like he was, when he got the two strikes, you were swinging and missing at that sweeper. This year it's down to 34% whiff percentage and just a 28% put away percentage, which is still, those are still good numbers. They're not the absolutely insane numbers from last year when he sort of discovered that pitch.
I think it's the curveball too, Steve, where like that one, the whiff rates dropped from 31% to 22%.
Yeah.
And he's using it less. The sweeper, he's throwing more, but like you said, it's not having the same results. So like overall, there's just like, I don't want to say like bad tinkering, but you know what I mean? Like he is changing a lot of stuff. He had the injury in the middle. So I don't know. I think that there's enough reason to be hopeful, especially with this like,
but your expectations are lower overall, it seems like, right?
Oh, I mean, I truly thought coming into the season that Pivetta was going to be like flirting with it, being an ace, and now I'm trying to see like of other names who I would kind of throw him out with in terms of just like, you know, you don't know what you, it's like a mini cherry bomb where you don't know what you're going to get, but you should get some strikeouts. I don't know. Not as electric as Luis Gil this season, at least, but like I'm feeling similar vibes to where game log wise, what are you going to get? So anyway,
Pivetta or Taj Bradley, who would you rather have for the rest of the season?
I mean, recency bias, I would probably say Bradley. Where's that in the list? I think Taj is, Taj is 35th. Yeah. So Nick's there too.
Yeah. He's just a tier ahead.
But Pivetta, like we talked about Carlos Rodon. I do think I'd rather, and I roster both, I'd rather Pivetta than Fromber. Because I think Pivetta has more of that K upside still, and he's shown it as the thing. It's just he needs to tap into those pitches to kind of turn the corner. So anyway, that's Pivetta. Thank you for the comment there, Jack. Hopefully that helps. Hang in there. I got him as well. And yeah, we'll get to a couple more names, but we're going to take our second ad break. We'll be right back after this.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. It's Jean Lafitte.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last crunch berry.
No!
No one steals my crunch berries.
I think you mean my crunch berries. Choose your own crunch venture with Cap'n Crunch.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then, learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Steve, this was one that, you know, right in line with like the Shane Baz hype train. Brandon Pfaadt is probably on the Mount Rushmore for names that we were fired up about when he was just carving up the PCL and had like a 14 strikeout per nine. And of course, then he came up, it looked awful. And, you know, we were all stashing him and devastated. And he's kind of, you know, it's like the no such thing as a pitching prospect. He's had a nonlinear way of kind of starting to figure some stuff out and has gotten the attention of some industry experts last week in terms of a six inning outing, eight strikeouts. And I believe it might have been against the Astros. I have this pulled up. Or, yeah, I mean, not the Astros, the Athletics, which
is
why.
A's, yeah. So different right. A's team.
Yeah. But that's why I think you got to give it a little bit of a caveat. But yeah, Pfaadt, Eric Samolsky, shout out as well. PitcherList has a nice article on Brandon Pfaadt and what he shifted this year in terms of his approach versus lefties. And it's interesting. I mean, we should link the article in the show notes if you can, Steve, but this was all from that tweak. And yes, it's against the A's, but he did this as well, I believe, against the
Twins was his last start.
Okay. I think it might have been the Twins. Altogether, looking at Pfaadt, you're starting to see him tap into what we were excited about in the first place, where the walk rate is just a 6%. He's starting to find those strikeouts in terms of like the raw stuff. Good extension. He's got a sweeper that moves a ton that gets good swing and miss stuff. So I think it's just like for a guy that's this deep, he's climbing up the ranks fast. I think Nick moved him up like 25 slots on the list. And again, in the spirit of guys who are available, Pfaadt should be available in some 12 teamers. I know he's out there in like my home league, for instance. So curious your thoughts on Pfaadt. We can kind of peel the onion layers here and start looking at some stuff, but it's an interesting name because this could be like we've seen with like Giolitos of the past, like these really high it's a post type bounce basically. So your thoughts on Mr. Brandon Pfaadt?
I think that he should be rostered in your home league. I know we talk, you can give each other feedback back and forth, but that's surprising to me. I'll definitely link Eric's article over at NBC Sports on Roto World. But he talked about what was a concern and probably still was a concern despite Pfaadt having a good year. It's just how he was able to approach lefties. He sort of quote unquote broke out in the postseason last year when he was like a long reliever. I think he started a few games, but he still struggled versus lefties because his best pitch is that sweeper, and sweepers have massive platoon splits and they lead to, you know, extremely hard contact, a lot of home runs opposite handed. And you know, he tried to add a sinker this year. And despite like the surface results being good, like the splits weren't great. Lefties this year were still hitting 299, 344, 457 versus him. So it's not great. Like he's still, like he's just surviving essentially against lefties. Like, you know, probably trying to pitch around them. You know, not give up the massive home run or you know, just fortune of the game, you know, not being up against a lefty in a big spot or facing teams with fewer lefties, whatever. But what Eric pointed out, and I don't want to ruin the whole article. I want you guys to read it and we'll link it, is that in his last start, he added a curveball, which he threw at 13.4% of the time against a lineup in Oakland had a bunch of lefties. And it did well. It was a 60% whiff rate and a 45% CSW, and things like that. Like sort of what we were talking about earlier in the show, like the one start, one tweak with Grayson Rodriguez changed up to the bottom of the zone. Like breakout potential could be happening. It's a one start versus the Oakland Athletics, but this is sort of the thing why pitching analysis is amazing and like what led to like. You know, the Cole Reagans, like why we jump on these things when it's a small sample. If there's a new tool and weapon for Schwott versus lefties with this curveball, it could be even more of an impressive second half, despite the first half being pretty good for him.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got on Saturday, he's at the Padres. So if you want to set a little reminder to see what he does there, that's going to be a better test than the A's. And before the A's, there were a couple mediocre starts at best against the Twins and the Nats. But he did have a real solid start, 6 innings, 8 strikeouts against the Angels before that. So yeah, I think it's interesting. And Eric points out that it like kind of qualifies that he doesn't think it's like a lurking ace is the way he puts it, but yeah. Somebody that, you know, could more or less be like a reliable SP5, which who doesn't need that in the home stretch of seasons. So yeah, I think it's a good one, Steve. Anything else to add on Schwott before we get to our final ray of the show?
No. I mean, it's worth noting that, you know, Schwott at every single stop had essentially a 30% strikeout rate in the minors. Like this is why we were super excited about him coming up. Like with a walk rate that was never above 6.3%. Like if you do like a scout the stat line, you shout out Foolish Baseball who does that, like I am all over Brandon Schwott. Sure, the strikeouts haven't truly translated to the majors yet because it's just been 22% across his now close to 200 innings at the major league level, but it could be coming because that swing and miss is there. He ran absurd swing strike rates too in the minors, like 16%, so the hype was justified, and sometimes it just takes a little while. And the last thing that could be coming for him is those Ks. If he does become like the 27, 28, 29% strikeout guy, that's when that's the hope and dream.
Massively,
but that'll be the ace. But it is a tall ask to add that 5 to 7% to a 22% strikeout.
It is, but it's soft analysis. But there's also something I know I've said it before about game logs that I like game logging guys who have touched a 12 strikeout game, even if
it's
the
in
next
there.
One they've
it's
got three. It's in there. I mean, for this guy, like you know, he has spent months at a time mowing down batters. Like he knows how to strike batters out and work through his pitches, and like you know, even if that hasn't translated, again, you know, it's in there to where he was, you know, a lights out, line him up, sit him down type of pitcher in the minors. So yeah, for someone that young, I think it's way too early to write him off and just say, you know, he's just like a command pitcher or something.
Yeah,
ridiculous.
For sure.
So let's go to our final one that we were excited in the offseason about, kind of a newborn command pitcher with some strikeouts as well. And that's Ryan Pepiot, who of course, came over from the Dodgers to the Rays. He was like an industry darling, and then everybody kind of cooled off on him. Steve, I think we kind of fell somewhere in the middle, where I would venture to say that he might be kind of a lesson learned for us, that we were more in December than we were in March. And then what we saw he was doing, we were like, oh man, we should add more Pepio, dude.
And
like,
we got too excited. Yeah.
In April, he was excellent. And we were like, man, we were all over that, and we got talked out of it. Anyway, he cooled off a little bit after April. So now this is another guy who's kind of gettable with a 4.40 ERA. But the 109 whip suggests that ERA is pretty inflated. And the strikeouts have been a welcomed addition compared to what we saw last year. He's got 83 Ks and 71 in the third, or two-thirds, sorry. And, yeah, I mean, what are we seeing here with Pepio, Steve? Do we think that this is a buy low opportunity? I'm not sure. I think he was, at least to start, pretty widely rostered. Again, just pulling up Yahoo ones, but yeah, 74%, so it would probably be pretty shallow trade targets. But with a May ERA of 6.17 and a June ERA of 5.33, I think, again, a guy that you could categorize as gettable. What are you thinking in terms of the breakout potential?
Yeah, good point there. I actually dropped Jack Flaherty for Ryan Pepiot after that, like, 12 strikeout game versus the Rockies. After I drafted Pepiot, he didn't have a great first start, and then I panicked, right, to run back to Adam. Yeah. Literally made a panic move.
And dropped Flaherty.
Yeah, ouch. And it's like, not like Pepiot's been horrible, no. But yes, I'd rather have Flaherty, obviously. Yeah, it's... I see why we were excited, right? Like, he finally figured out the walk rate towards the end of the year. But it was just a 42-inning sample. He had a 189 BABIP and a 99.2% left on base percentage. So what does that mean? Only, like, one or two of the base runners that came around to score on him? Absolutely insane. Sure, yeah, the swing strike rate is good, and the strikeouts are still good this year. And there's been points where I've come close to dropping Ryan Pepiot after that in my home league, but I keep being pulled back in, essentially by the last person I thought would be in on this, and that's Nick Pollock. Shout out to Nick again on this podcast, and also for retweeting this. That's why we have so many of you watching right now on the live stream. But Nick's been pretty consistent with Ryan Pepiot and ranking him high and believing in him all year. And that's kind of why I still am. It just goes to show, like, how good that fastball is. The Rays, I'm really surprised it hasn't gone better. Like, how have the Rays not gotten more out of him, like, with fastballs up in the zone? Sure, the changeup hasn't been as good this year, but the slider still gets missed. It's like another guy like Grayson Rodriguez that has four pitches with a 27% whiff rate or better. Like, that's crazy. Sure, yeah, the curveball he only throws 2.6% of the time, but he has a 35% whiff rate on his fastball, 27% on the slider and the changeup. It's like all the tools are there. All the tools are there. I can see why Nick is still all about it. Like, he's still super high on the list, Pepiot, that is, you know, for a guy that has been struggling. And, you know, I think it's also like, when you look at stuff like this, like, if you're looking for breakouts, if you're looking for guys to buy low on, like, don't even look at the ERA. Like, don't look at the ERA. I'm more concerned with the fact that Pepiot has gone 4.2 innings, 3.1, 5.1, and 4 innings in his last four starts. Tonight's start on Wednesday night, the 3rd, was not great. I don't even think he had a strikeout. This is probably his worst start of the year, because even when he's been going, you know, he went 5 1/3 innings last start, but he had 8 strikeouts, so you kind of saw that with the high pitch count. But he has not pitched into the 7th this year. And despite that fact, he is still 36th on the list for Nick, right behind Taj Bradley.
Yeah, I mean, he's the 16th best CSW in all of baseball,
yeah.
Top 25 on swing strike rate. I think to your point on the four-seamer, for someone who we were kind of prematurely crowning a command specialist from what we saw last year, mm-hmm. and then it was just kind of blind faith in the Rays making it work. I know that's
we
always talk about
that. Lean on the Savali thing, yeah.
But the looking at his pitcher list page, like the high lock, which you want with the four-seamer, he throws it. It's 53rd percentile on high lock, and then like the changeup he throws low, the slider he does not throw low. So it's like the upside down Blake Snell blueprint, where it's like, you know, clearly something's working in terms of the swinging strike rate, but I just wonder if that's, is he just getting hit too hard when he does get hit, because the whip isn't the issue. Where's his BABIP at?
He's 18th among pitchers with 60 innings in strikeout minus walk. That's what I keep on coming back to. It is a 70% left on base, a 250 BABIP, so nothing crazy. But the left on base could be a little bit better. He doesn't get that many ground balls. He does give up a good amount of barrels and hard contact, so that goes against him. But, yeah, I could see why Nick believes in it, and why I'm sure he would still say better days are ahead and would think you're crazy for dropping him. I've had to talk myself out of that a few times, but looking at our process stats, we shouldn't, right? Like, the strikeouts are good, the walks are manageable, the stuff is good.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I do think if you're with Nick on kind of the valuation of Pepio, you should have not a difficult time trading.
Adding him, trading for him? Yeah, no,
because,
not at all.
Yeah, he is in the same tier as, like, Jared Jones, Taj Bradley,
and
I don't think
managers will value him the same as those guys.
No, he's a 440 ERA, and that's what people are going to see.
He's not pitching deep into games. Yeah.
Yeah, right. He's been struggling. So that's a good trade target, though. And I want to be on the record with you, Steve, that I am still a believer in Pepio. And yeah, man, I mean, all around, like, no joke. If the Rays are on, you're going to be watching in pretty short order one of, like, Pepio, Eflin, Springs, Taj Bradley, Shane Boz. Like, it's going to be
that's a fun right rotation. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, that's a good note to end on there, Steve. So, with that said, looking at this list of names, is there anyone that really, really jumps out? I think we got a couple interesting ones that are, like, addable, stashable, if you will, with, like, mm-hmm. Springs and
Ben Brown.
Brown. But, Fott's out there in my home league. I think I might explore manager talks with the guy that's got Pepio. Mm-hmm. And even Grayson was leading off. That was a strong one to lead off with. Mm-hmm. But good list. Any closing thoughts before
the one up? I'm hoping it would make us look the smartest would be Ben Brown. It's probably the biggest long shot there, too. But he does have super exciting stuff. And if he can get healthy and, like, carve out a role in the rotation, and be a solid guy there, that could be a cool call that I hope comes through. But yeah, I'm with Nick. I believe G-Rod Grayson Rodriguez is on his way to become, like, a top 10, top 5 starting pitcher. It just sometimes takes a little bit for these guys. It's not even like it's been that long. Right. Since 5/15, since when he came back, he had that 2-week injury after that Yankee start. He has the best stuff in baseball, like the best stuff. Plus, he's number one. So that's how good it is. Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for tuning in. Those of you on the live stream, and definitely those who are tuning in on the podcast as well. Happy 4th of July. Ladies and gentlemen, for those who celebrate that are tuning in. I know we got some international ones as well every now and then, but yeah, hopefully you guys enjoyed baseball. Steve, I know we talked off air, but sounds like you're going to have a nice nice relaxing day. I'm going to be hacking it up on the golf course.
Nice, man.
But yeah, it's been a blast as always, man. Switching gears from hitters to pitchers. But that wraps us up for episode 146. I'm Van Burnett, joined as always by Steve. You guys can follow us on Twitter. I'm at @Van_verified. Steve is at @Stav8818. It's episode 146, talking second half pitching breakout candidates. Thanks for talking baseball with us, guys.
Thanks for listening, guys. Happy 4th of July.
How about Cap'n Crunch's Crunch Berries with breakfast?
Whoa, Dad, we're on
Crunch Island. He's John LeFoot.
And he stole our crunch.
Quick, the zip line.
He's getting away.
Throw our last Crunch Berry.
No!
No one steals my Crunch Berries.
I think you mean my Crunch Berries. Choose your own Crunch Venture with Cap'n Crunch.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.